This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 21st of September 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. Today we're asking, why go solo? When you've had a fight with the drummer, or you've got material you're just itching to have your own name on, or if you just can't stand sitting on a tour bus for a second longer with a drunk guitarist or a prima donna singer, you might consider going solo. Or maybe you just want a change of pace and, after all, you've just had that lovely recording studio built in the grounds of your country pile. We're keeping it musical because, well, artists and novelists and filmmakers don't tend to hunt in packs, do they? We'll speak to a couple of musicians who've recently made the switch, Johnny Burrell, one-time leading light of indie rock big boys Razorlight, and look here, Nicolas Gaudin, half of French electro magician's Air, has just made a very fine first solo LP.
Hard to make original music after 15 years of making records, you know, that's my only issue that I have, and that's the only problem that I have to face in my life right now.
Why go solo on this week's edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound. Everybody loves Air, the French electronic duo whose album Moon Safari was greeted with rapturous applause right across the globe when it was released in the late 90s. It became an instant classic and it was followed up by a handful of wonderful retro-futurist records released at a stately canter rather than the gallop, and all of them golden. One half of the band, Nicolas Gaudin, last week released his debut solo project, Contrepoint, a deft and charming piece of electronic magic. So what's it like going from being in that hugely successful double act to being a one-man band? Does he feel like he has to live up to the success of Moon Safari? Monocle's Paris correspondent Tom Burgess Watson put those questions to him, but started by asking him about his new LP.
My main influence in Contrepoint was Glenn Gould and the Bach music, because I was getting a little bit in a routine with Air by playing every night the same songs. And then I wanted to learn new things, and obviously it's like I feel like I was not getting into new influences. I think I tried everything I could do by my own means. So I need to be a better musician so I can find new process to record and to compose. So I went into classical music because of Glenn Gould, and I was very impressed by this. He was very smart about how his theory about music and his theory about making something towards the future but based on the past, you know, and to make something new out of something old, you know, and I thought it was an interesting thing to explore.
Tell us a little bit more, Nicolas, about your work at the moment. You're not using the name Air anymore, but of course that was the name that everyone associates you with. How are you finding not being part of Air and being Nicolas Gaudin?
It was very simple, actually, because it was such a personal project. So I didn't have any problem to choose my name, because it's something from my heart. And it was not... I know my band members, when they go on a side project, they pick up a band names, you know, like Damon Albarn, what he does with the Koreas, or there's many examples like that. But for me, it's like my plan was not to do Air without JB, you know. So it was just a personal thing. So it's not a band, it's not a concept, it's just me trying to struggle against myself not to lose inspiration, you know. So it's a very personal thing.
What's it like not having that other person to bounce ideas off and to talk creatively with?
I thought it was a little bit dangerous at the beginning. That's why I never did a solo record before. But I did it without thinking about it. And now I did it. I understand. I kind of like the way that you can push an idea all the way through because when you make a band, you have to make compromises. And then sometimes you're a little bit frustrated because you, some leads, you would have liked to push them much more far, you know, and because you're making a band, you have to stop yourself from going extreme. And sometimes it's hard to make music while someone else is waiting, sitting in the studio, waiting for you to finish what you're thinking of. So it makes me insecure. But when you're alone, you're not insecure anymore because you have no one waiting in line, you know, just to for you to finish something, you know. So it's very cool, actually.
Do you feel any pressure? Because when you think about how successful an album like Moon Safari was, do you feel like you've got to try to live up to that level of success? And that's set the bar incredibly high, hasn't it?
Not really, because as a French person, I was more about my personal pride, you know, but not in terms of commercial success, really. It's just I had to challenge myself. It's like when you run a marathon and you're happy to have reached all the way through, you know, and I think artistically, I wanted to renew myself, and that was a personal challenging thing. And so for this part, actually, I think I did what I had to do. So I don't feel the pressure now, the audience, the success, and it's something completely different. But then for that, I'm not worried. It's not something that got me worried. It's much more how to make original music after 15 years of making records. You know, that's my only issue that I have, and that's the only problem that I have to face in my life right now.
The other half of Air, if I can call him that, Jean Benoit, he's also gone solo. Does that introduce a kind of element of competition and pride into the whole equation?
No, because we were in competition while we were recording the Air's album. For example, when we did Moon Safari, it was very successful, and then we did the second album and we were competing to find the most complicated chord in the studio, me and him, you know. So we already had this competition, and as I said, this project is something so personal, so it's not related to his work, but we had a lot of competition inside the Air band while we did the recording process.
You're saying you basically feel liberated now that you're a solo artist?
Yes, it's a liberation.
That was Nicolas Gaudin speaking to Monocle's Paris correspondent Tom Burgess Watson, and that new album Contrepoint is out now on Because Records, and it is a beautiful thing. Next up, music journalist and Monocle regular Andrew Muller will be joining me in the studio to sift through the Iggy's, McCartney's and Jackson's of the pop world to see who outgrew their comrades and who should have stuck with the band. Andrew Muller, welcome back to The Culture Show. Familiar voice, obviously, to Monocle 24 listeners and to Culture Show listeners. Today we're asking the question, why go solo? Now we're going to ask you, who has negotiated this sometimes perilous precipice with ease and aplomb? The first name I've got written on my list is Morrissey and the Smiths.
Morrissey, I would advance as a fairly solid case for not going solo. In fact, I would advance Morrissey as a fairly solid case for not doing a lot of things, like, for example, listening to any of his largely dreadful solo records. He's a good example because the Smiths are a terrific example for the maddening and fascinating fact about great rock and roll bands, that they are all more than the sum of their parts. There is something about some groups, it's the particular gathering of people in a room, they bring the best out of each other for reasons nobody understands. Otherwise, it would be the easiest thing in the world to put together a great rock and roll band. And there's been any number of attempts. It was a very big thing in the 60s and 70s to have the supergroup, where you just think, well, we get a bunch of brilliantly talented musicians. This will sound great. And it was almost always awful. Morrissey and Marr were one of those classic opposing pairings, I think, which is not to belittle the role played by the rhythm section in the Smiths, who were amazing. But, yeah, you had, on the one hand, the sort of flamboyant, vainglorious singer who bought the guitarist out of himself, but you also had the very diligent, restrained guitarist who reined in probably some of the worst excesses of the flamboyant, vainglorious singer. I would argue that Morrissey has not made a decent solo album since his first, which was Viva Hate, very shortly after the Smiths split. And I think if there is one thing that distinguishes everything he's done since, I think it is a clear lack of someone in his life willing to take him to one side and say, nah, don't do that. Why do you come here? And why?
But is that the kind of main difference, do you see? There is that often aggressive or kind of a disharmonious marriage at the front of so many great bands that is the grit that makes the oyster. Do you see that's what's lacking in lots of solo careers?
There's often the disharmonious relationship that brings the best out of the people involved. There's also the harmonious relationship. And one of the more self-aware things I've ever heard from any musician I've ever interviewed was in an interview I've interviewed you two a few times, but I think if memory serves, this was an interview circa 97 on the pop tour. And, you know, it's amazing to think that was nearly 20 years ago. And in 1997, it seemed like you two had lasted forever. And I was asking Bono about what made the relationship between the four men work. Because what's interesting about them is that they've never got to the stage of everybody wanting their own tour bus. They also still seem to actually like each other, which is, of course, one of the reasons that members of bands go solo, is they're just absolutely sick to death of everybody they're in the group with. And he did say that it is an extraordinary balance of personalities. He said the most obvious pole is between himself being the flamboyant, vainglorious singer, and in their case, the steady hand on the till, almost literally, is the drummer, Larry Mullen Jr. But the thing that I thought was just charmingly self-aware that Bono said, I mean, he just said, God, can you imagine if I made a solo album?
Not many frontmen say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, after which there was a frankly appalled silence from both of us as we actually considered what that might be like. I mean, there has been, though it's not widely known, about one U2 solo album. Edge made a soundtrack album for a film called Captive in 1986.
And soundtracks are a little bit different.
And it really wasn't very good. And they have done other collaborations, but there is a recognition among those four men that there is something about them playing together that is something beyond anything they could do by themselves.
And the rare self-knowledge that if they did anything themselves, they'd mess up the band.
And that is extraordinary self-awareness, because when you can choose to surround yourself with people, as any famous musician can, who will just tell you that everything you do, think or say is brilliant, that's a very difficult temptation to resist. Mm. Everyone likes being told they're brilliant. If you think, wow, I can just be told this all the time, fantastic. but yeah, you do need to have somebody saying to you, God, no, that's a terrible idea, and here's why. And it has to be someone you respect enough to listen to them.
So let's talk about some of the successes then. Let's talk about people that have come out. There's a lot of artists that people, depending upon generations and depending upon your knowledge of back catalogue, et cetera, you would never even guess had a career in a band. You know, like Paul Simon almost is one of those people that you might think back to. Neil Young is one of those people you might think back to.
Neil Young was in a group in as much as it was one of your 60, 70 supergroups, really. It was, yeah, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. And that was kind of four men trying to have a solo career all at the same time in one band. I mean, I think the ones that people really do forget or may forget had a previous group, someone like Iggy Pop, who was a singer in an astonishing and important rock and roll band, The Stooges, and then went on to conduct an astonishing and important solo career. His approximate contemporary, Lou Reed, as well. Again, you know, the Velvet Underground, as everyone says, you know, never has a band been so influential who sold so few records. But his solo career built on what he'd already accomplished with the Velvet Underground, and was mostly really good in itself. I mean, there's Lou Reed filed one or two acts of hopeless folly along the way, but his average was actually really pretty high. Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked away across USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side.
let's talk about the Beatles. Well, you know,
you have to, obviously.
See, I love Paul McCartney's, most of Paul McCartney's solo stuff, to be honest.
And, are you insane?
Well, but it is one of those funny things. I mean, lots of people think that George Harrison had the best post-Beatles solo career. What on earth can we do with this? Such an important band with such a kind of, yeah, I suppose, disharmonious at the end kind of marriage at the centre of it. What do we make of what came after that?
Well, they clearly had to do something, and I do think it is possibly at the risk. I will say that any listeners currently undergoing any sort of existential crisis should probably just plug their ears for the next few seconds. A fact that can, I think, depending on what sort of mood you're in, sort of reduce you to waking screaming in the night is that when the Beatles split up, none of them were 30 years old. Which rather puts in perspective anything you think you're actually going to accomplish in your time here. So obviously it wasn't reasonable of them just to expect to just sort of drift off into a dignified silence. But again, they are an example of that the sum of their parts thing. A few of them made very good solo records. I'm not sure you could say there's a single genuinely great solo Beatles album. There's great songs. There's great moments. You would just be trying to start a fight if you said any one Beatles solo album was even in the same universe as a Revolver or a Rubber Soul. It would just be an absolutely preposterous thing to say. Again, it's the balance of personalities. But I think if you basically get to your 30th birthday and think, I've done the Beatles, I've basically changed the entire world to a large extent in my own image, a certain amount of hubris will ensue. But I do often wonder how you get to a point if you are someone like Paul McCartney, sort of like sitting listening to the playback of, I don't know, the Pipes of Peace or
Frog Song,
Frog Chorus, or anything else that may fall under the heading of what John Lennon would have called McCartney's granny crap, and just like sitting there thinking, yeah, this is totally as good as Helter Skelter. Absolutely, no doubt about that at all.
She can be a belly dancer, I don't need a true romancer. She can be a diplomat, but I don't need a girl like that. She can be a neurosurgeon if she's doing nothing urgent. What I need's a temporary secretary.
And we managed to get through the entire chat without talking about Beyoncé, Phil Collins, or Bryan Ferry. But Bryan Ferry is an interesting one, isn't he? Maybe we won't. Maybe we will get through it without talking about Bryan Ferry. Because they have such different sounds, those records. I mean, the kind of inossification of Roxy Music, and then the kind of the very classy and often really good loungy kind of Bryan Ferry stuff. Where do you sit on that?
Well, that's really how you get away with it, I think, if you're going to go solo.
Make it sound
just
so
do
different.
Something. Well, again, it swings and roundabouts because to a certain extent, this way lies David Lee Roth. but you're right, what Bryan Ferry did was completely reinvented himself, found an entirely new career for himself. You could also argue that Michael Jackson did the same thing, although and again, at the risk of confronting the wisdom that X million record buyers can't be wrong, I don't like many of his solo records. The first album, Off the Wall, is magnificent, especially the single Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, which is, I think if you had 3 minutes to explain pop music to a visiting Martian, that's probably the 3 minutes you play them. But again, he went from being a front man, but a kind of a novelty act, the Jackson 5. Kind of. They did make some fantastic records, but they weren't regarded as, especially at the time, as serious artists. And he did manage to turn himself to an extent into one.
That was Andrew Miller talking me through the highs and lows of various solo careers over the decades. After the break, I'll meet another man who's gone it alone, Razorlight frontman Johnny Burrell.
Travel in comfort with the help of the Monocle Shop. It's the place to select the best bags, passport wallets, travel guides, and, of course, the latest issue of the magazine to entertain you on your lounger. We have a great lineup of special collaboration bags with Porter in Japan, including the new Overnighter bag, ideal for a city weekend trip. And then there's the limited edition Remova multi-wheel, made from lightweight polycarbonate in a special monocle edition. Visit our stores in London, New York, Toronto, Singapore, Tokyo, and Hong Kong, or shop online at monocle.com. Be the one turning heads at the luggage carousel.
Do you ever feel like you've missed out on something? Have you been on the road? Miss the latest world news? Then catch up with The Recap, the best of the week's cutting-edge reports, comment, news and features from all the flagship shows on Monocle 24. Join us every Saturday from 1400 London time or via the Monocle 24 app.
You're listening to Culture on Monocle 24 with me, Robert Band, and today we're asking, why go solo? Johnny Burrell, former Razorlight leading light, went solo with a couple of self-titled albums under his spangly belt that went down very well. Johnny Burrell and Zazu, with a bit of chanson and a bit of folk, are his latest formula for solo success. But why go solo, Johnny?
It's a very interesting question, and I already feel in at the deep end in attempting to respond to that. First of all, you'd have to define the difference between being solo and being in a band.
Okay.
Which is a very difficult thing to quantify.
Well, I suppose in Razorlight, like you, the lead songwriter and the frontman, is it very different being Johnny Burrell and Zazu at the moment, for example?
In some ways, but in a lot of ways it isn't, because I don't know how other people work, but whatever I do, it's always a collaboration with the musicians, and I've always been the writer in what I bring in. Lights tumble through my eyes. She's as good as an eyeball. Hot so electric crystal.
People from the outside, though, kind of think it must be a massive difference. It's like, oh yeah, no, he's doing this now. It's totally different, and they expect you to. Sometimes you can go on stage wearing whatever you want. There isn't the brand of the band. You can kind of break out of that. Is that part of maybe if there is an idea of freedom that you can be a different brand name almost?
Maybe, but I also think that if you're in a band, you're free in the first place.
Okay,
you have to be. I mean, you know, I'm probably the worst person to ask, because if you think about. I'm trying to imagine if I was in my friend's bands or something like that. If I was in a band, say, with two huge creative driving figures, then I think it's a very different thing, because I think the band can only exist with that creative...
Okay. And with a bit of
with
the
that
troubles,
creative
a bit
tension
of the nitty-gritty that goes on.
And then it's trying to keep a marriage going.
Yeah.
You know, and the strange thing about being in a band is that nobody tells you, you know, you're 22 years old or whatever, and you're playing guitar, you find a bunch of people that you like playing guitar with. And then, you know, 6 years later, you're still together going around the world or whatever, and people are like, well, you know, it's kind of like a relationship. It's like a marriage, you know, you've got to work at it. And you're like, but I didn't ever want to get married in the first place. Secondly, not to a man, and secondly, not to three men at once, you know, so how am I supposed to deal with this?
It's quite an undertaking.
It is. You know, you get very complicated situations because everyone has different priorities in the band. I suppose that's the main difference, right? Because, I mean, creatively, I don't think there's much difference at all.
Okay.
Right? And I think that was probably what I was trying to say, because you bring in your idea. The difference between a bass player who's bored and being told what to do and he's going dum, 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 sounds really dull.
Yeah.
But the same bass player who's picked up his bass, worked out how to plug it in, which is complicated, and then gone boom, 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 boom with his tail up, sounds really fun and exciting.
Yeah, okay.
So that's how you create. So you, whether you're the guy and you've got, well, this is the chart, this is how the song goes or whatever, or it's the ideas come up amongst you, everyone has to be excited. And I think that's no different in my experience if it's a solo thing or a band. And quite often when I've tried to do a band, it's ended up being a solo, more of a solo project, and when I've tried to make a solo project, it's ended up more of a band.
That's a nice way of looking at things, right?
Well, it's maddening, but it's fun as well.
When you're doing a solo record, have you ever needed someone to say, don't do that? I wonder whether there's a different sort of set of breaks on a solo project as there is on a band record.
Creatively, it's just the same. For a genuine creational, I mean, this is just the way I do it. Once you're in that genuine creation and you've made the connection with everybody and whoever is producing. I mean, I produce it now myself, but whoever's producing is, you kind of think the same thing. The music is guiding you by that point, and you're all just being drawn towards it. It's not like, oh, no, don't do that. Actually, it's like you're trying to paint with oil or something. You've done your sketch, and then to an extent, the medium is going to take you to where...
So it starts writing itself after a while.
It
right?
does.
People say that about books and things.
It's completely irresistible. I'm playing with musicians, and they go, oh, yeah, you know. How did you write that song, America? It's pretty cheesy. Right,
it's okay. A great song.
Well, a lot of people like it, yeah. Right? Okay, I don't know how, you know, I think half of me likes it, the other half, you know, I don't know. And I just remember that, for instance, that was a good example of something that was irresistible. It just had its, that was something me and Andy did, our old drummer in Razorlight, and it was just irresistible. It, once we started it, it sort of became what it had to be. All my life, watching America.
And both those records, your last two solo records, your record, current record with Zazu and Burrell One, they're different sounding records to Razorlight. So that's why I asked you the question about freedom at the beginning, because it's suddenly like wake up one morning and you're doing something else. That's not a purposeful decision you make by the sound of it, but your clock ticks to a different beat, I suppose, suddenly.
In the sense that, you know, you evolve, right? I mean, it's not unusual in anything.
No, indeed.
You know, like, it's very, very rare that you have one formula and keep doing it in any kind of real artistic endeavor. If you want to have your trademark and go and sell it around the world, then fine, that works, right? And with Razorlight, we had a pretty good trademark. But I had, despite all the commercial pressure, you know, from sort of, you know, the people with vested interests, I had absolutely no interest in replicating the commercial formula. You know, for me, creativity is really the part that I enjoy in making records. In terms of songwriting, I express myself and I express the parts of myself that have to be expressed, and I try and synthesize all my disparate sort of points of view into somehow through songs but making records, the bit that's amazing is the collaborating and having that feeling of a band. And I could never make a solo record that didn't have a great band. A hat for your head.
That was Johnny Burrell, and his new single, Black God, is available now, released by Atlantic Culture Records. So why go solo? Well, it's a mixed musical bag. Sometimes you go solo because you've written lots of songs with absolutely no help from your friends, and why share the wealth? Sometimes because you want to make a different sort of record, or you want to throw off your art school spikiness to relaunch yourself as a lounge crooner, or the other way around. Sometimes you've got something to get off your chest that doesn't suit the other guys, and sometimes, yes, you just really hate the rest of the band. Why go solo? Because you can. And doesn't the album cover look great with just your name on it? And that brings us to the end of this week's show. You've been listening to Culture on Monocle 24. My producer was the singular Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.